Okay, so with me this week is Kev from the Film Guff podcast. How are you doing, Kev?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm not too bad. It's Kev with a C, isn't it?
It is, yeah. My dad's got a sense of humour.
The only reason why I mentioned that for is, do you get annoyed with people misspelling your name a lot? Because I certainly do. Being Kurt, I get called Kirk and get to put a C in front of it and stuff. Or...
Not particularly. I think I became quite blasé about the whole thing, you know, but especially with officialdom, because they seem to have a lot of problems with it. I think it took about 3 attempts for my first driving licence. So, kind of used to it. I get pronounced all sorts of different ways as well, like Sevin or Sevny or whatever. You know, it's just bonkers.
Yeah, well, as I say, I mean, I've got somebody at work who, even though I've got a name badge, still refuses to call me Kurt. He calls me Kirk, and it's like,
I'm, cake.
My name, my name badge is right next to me, but never mind. That's one of those things. So your podcast is, I think it's around 30 episodes deep now, somewhere around there, isn't it? So just before we go into the film guff, I just would like to get some background on yourself, Kev, really, just to give the listeners some idea of where you've come from and what you've done in the past. So what is your background? You mentioned in your first episode that you did on film guff that you don't have any formal university education.
Same here.
So you mentioned that. But where did you come in from? Where are you coming from? What's your kind of angle going into your first podcast, whether it be Film Guff or anything you've done prior, really? How has that all come about?
Well, prior to Film Guff, I were in Laps Gamer Radio, where I did that for, well, I've just finished doing that actually this year, after 3 years. But that was kind of an introduction into gaming for people that had not played it in years. We were all roughly about the same age group, you know, we were all sort of dads and sort of later in life kind of thing. And it was quite a neat angle, you know, and it was quite fun. But I felt, you know, my real passion is films. But like I said, I've not got any formal qualifications or anything like that. I'm certainly not a paid critic or anything. But me and Ali, that I do the podcast with, we both love our films, but we do it from a kind of Joe Schmo, you know, Joe Public perspective of it. You know, we just go, yeah, this is good, this is crap, this is good, this is crap.
Yeah, and I think probably a lot of people will appreciate that as well. It's fantastic that we get to hear, you know, basically, I'm not doing Suicide Squad without
yeah.
How did you, where did the idea for podcasting come about? You say you've done that for around 3 years prior. Where did the drive and the desire come from wanting to do that?
Well, it was a bizarre one because it was set up by Lee Howard from Movie Matters, which is a podcast that was a film podcast again. And he came about with the idea, and there was 2 or 3 of us that came in on with him. And he got me roped in because I had a studio. What year is it? I've had about 30 years experience in a studio, so I'm kind of used to a recording environment. But recording bands and punk bands and stuff is quite different to recording podcast. It's a different discipline altogether as far as mastering and what have you. But so he dragged me in for that, basically, because I've got the know-how and the tech. I could do that, but the first episode I remember going, good grief, this is terrifying. I don't actually want to hear my own voice.
Yeah, it's I was the same, really. Not necessarily my own voice, because I'm quite happy with my voice. Similar to you, I come from a band background. I play in a band, and I've done function work for over 20 years now, so have being in front of a crowd and talking and doing disco and things like that isn't a problem to me.
Yeah, same here. I DJ a lot as well.
Yeah, so but with that, not necessarily having set patter or being able to, but you've got, you're in your comfort zone, you know what you're doing.
Yeah.
So when somebody comes to you and says, what do you think of this episode? And you're like, yeah, but everything's fine. Yeah, which is where I came from. And it's good you've brought up the studio, because that's something that I had noticed as I was going through your podcast over the past few weeks, really, just listening here and there where I can, was something that I wanted to pick up, because it's not something that I would necessarily ask most people on the show. So, and because you've got the studio, I think it's worth asking. So, going, if we move into the film Guff and the podcast that you've formulated before, how from recording the episode and you getting your part, your waveforms together and looking on your screen at what you need to edit, how does that all come together, and how do you view editing from that point of view, from literally the, you know, hour long, 2 hour long podcast that you've got ready down to edit? How do you go through, what's the steps that you go through to do that edit?
The first steps, obviously, from the recording perspective, we record separately. Everybody always records in wave format. We don't use MP3s because you lose too much audio. You know, you got a lot of messing around, a lot of artifacts. I get the separate waves together, and I use Adobe Audition to edit on because it's such a powerful tool. What I'll normally do is assemble everything first, get everything so that it's all running in time together, and then basically look at you know, basically bits that don't need to be there. Stuff where you'll have a host, they'll just start repeating themselves or something like that. You know, you'll find that you'll go through the same message again later on in the talk, or you'll find something's just not working because you've got a really good position on the conversation, that everything's on quite a high, and then somebody could come in and say something and it just kills it, slows the momentum down. You don't want it. You've got to be a firm editor. You know, you've got to be able to actually sit there and think, no, you've got to be able to distance yourself and take a step back and go, really, does this still work? You know, tends to be better if you give yourself sort of a few days at least to cool off and then come back. If you're actually on the recording session, that is.
I've found that recently when I've looked at, because I've done a few edits recently, not just on this podcast, but on other ones that I'm on. And I found that it's still a learning process for me, because my edits in the past, when I've been on the band and whatever, where I've needed to do stuff, it's kind of just chopping here and there for, you know, so it makes it more segue really rather than anything else.
Yeah.
But what I found is that I do a general quick edit. I'm pretty much straight after I do the recording, and then come back to it 2 or 3 days later and just keep chopping away at it a little bit at a time when I get time, really. Going back to where you were, so you do that, you've come back to it a few days later. Do you EQ it and take all the noise reduction and all that type of thing?
Yes.
Do you sort of get into that quite significantly then?
Yeah. Once I've done the assembly, this is where the real nitty-gritty comes down, because obviously, like, I'm running on one at the minute where the guest that we got on didn't realise that you weren't supposed to have any speakers on. So I've got the problem of he's got all our audio as well. You know, so we've got a lot of bleed off, and it just really sort of nails you to a cross, basically, because you've got to make sure that everything's sequenced up solid.
Yeah.
And there's parts of that conversation you don't want in anyway. So the next point is to actually cut it down. And sometimes it's basically just going through the individual track and cutting out all the bits that you don't want, you know, get rid of, mute all the audio that you're not actually going to be using. So that's the next bit. And that's the bit that takes the longest, I would say. And then, of course, there's throwing in the music and effects and film clips and stuff like that.
So what format do you normally put it out? You mentioned, obviously, you get everything in wave format as the source material. Do you output wave and then upload it, or does it go to a lossless file? Or how do you do that once you're ready to upload it? And do you have any problems with compatibility issues with certain podcasts?
No, not at all, no. Because all I'll do is I'll output it to Wave as a final mix, then check that, and then when I'm finally happy, which honestly can take a while for me to be finally happy. once I've done that, I will then change it over to MP3, and it's always at 128 kilobytes per second because it's the quickest and easiest. You know, nobody wants to be able to fill the phone up with four podcasts, you know. So
from the look of it on some of the credits that you actually do you've done the music as well.
Yeah.
You've mixed that music as well, haven't you? So it was certainly some I was listening to it on a night time at work when I was just sitting in the bar doing some paperwork, and I put it on the first episode, and I was like, oh, this is good. Mm. So moving back to the Film Guff podcast, you do that with Ali. How do you record that? Are you in the same room? Are you miles away? How does that come together?
We're miles away. He's in Derby, I'm in Doncaster. Okay. we've met a few times, but yeah, we're just good mates, and we talk quite often, you know, without recording podcast. But we use Google Hangouts because it's just a really solid platform, you know, and we can talk all night basically on that, and it doesn't drop out. You don't get the problem of Skype going a bit weird or echoey or, you know, time dilation.
Yeah. I recently had some time dilation issues. The first time I've had it as well, where I was like, oh, hang on, this WAV file seems to be slipping quite a bit.
Yeah.
That is good to know, and it's something I might look into in the future.
When I was doing Laps Gamer, we had a guy in Canada, and it was great, you know, but obviously using Skype, he used to have quite some crazy time dilation issues. You know, we would have times where he would be losing about, I would say, 45 seconds for every 4 minutes.
Right,
you know,
yeah.
You'd really have to try and cut it and then bring it back into line. The edits would take a long time with that.
So Google Hangout is kind of the probably the way forward, really. The only problem that I have with Google Hangouts currently at the moment, I'm probably trying to do this, is getting other people to get onto it. So as you say, with the time slip dilation thing, it's definitely became an issue over the last few weeks for me, and it's something that I'll probably look into. So without a doubt, it's something I need to look at.
The main reason that we record via WAV and do it locally, you know, rather than recording a call, is because not only do you have the editing flexibility, you also have a rock solid audio at either end, you know, so you can actually have a high quality sounding podcast. I mean, I've heard podcasts that are literally a recording of a Skype call, and it's shocking sometimes. And you think, really, if you are that passionate about what you're doing, then you've already there. You've only got one step to do, and that's just actually take care when you're recording it.
I mean, even I've mentioned this on a previous podcast, so I won't go too much into it. But even it's simple and quite cheap to get going. I mean, I know you use Adobe.
Yeah.
I mean, I use Audacity, and Audacity is a free program that anyone can use. So just having that option of being able to record your side and my side, and having that sent and match up is streets ahead of a normal phone call. I mean, sometimes you might get really lucky with Skype and you get a clear call, but it's very rare.
Very rare.
Okay, so on with regards to Film Guff then, yeah, so obviously you and Ali have got together, and you look at films from, as you say, from a general perspective. Do you have a particular favourite type of film that you tend to go for, or do you just think if a film's good, it's good, or it's crap, or it's crap? How do you kind of come up with the idea of what films to do, and what are your favourite type of films?
Well, it's a weird one because we come to it from two ends of the spectrum, really, because I like a lot of art house and horror and a lot of foreign stuff, and Ali likes his action, his blockbusters, you know, his sort of new and now his comic book films. I mean, like, for instance, we're doing a black and white movie this week that's coming out. Actually, this should be coming out later this week. But the first thing he said when he saw that it was a black and white film was, oh, God, no, black and white. Like, oh, great, you're going to love it when we do a foreign one.
Oh, God, yeah.
But it's sort of flip side, you know, because he's wanting us to do the big blockbusters and stuff. And sometimes I just sit there and think, oh, my God, no, really? Mm. Oh, yeah, okay, right. It's got car chases and explosions. Fine. But that kind of works anyway. It works in the dynamic because we just sit there calling both of us idiots, you know, because we are. We're both a couple of idiots, but we just like our things.
Yeah. And is that the reason why you do the podcast the way that you've done it? I haven't listened to some of the later ones. I know you've got guests on the later ones, but generally you pick a film for each other and have another film as the main showcase as such.
Yeah.
Is that the reason why you did that?
Yeah, partly because of that, because we were just trying to get some sort of format and some sort of theme running, and we figured picking three films, you know, two that would give us homework to each other, and then the third that would share, you know, it seemed like a good idea to get us into it.
And
we've broken off a bit now because obviously we're having the guests on. It's changed the dynamic. What we do is we'll talk about what films we've watched recently, and then the guest will bring in a film, and we then have to do that as our homework.
I was going to ask that as well. You are about 30 episodes, around the 30 episode mark. Yeah. I don't think you've quite got there yet. From what I've
released, I think we're up to 26, but I've got until January sorted out for next year. So.
Right, okay. So you've got up to about the 30 episode mark. So how has it changed over time? Have you felt that the podcast itself has changed? I mean, you mentioned there about the having the special guests, but has anything else over the course of the run changed over those 30 episodes?
There has been a quite bit of change because we started off with the three film format and then realised that sometimes we just wanted to talk about other stuff. And we thought, as well as that, sticking to a strong format, yeah, fair enough, it might be a good idea for people that are listening to it regularly, but you might actually be cutting your nose off to spite your face by limiting, you know, what you're talking about. There's people that joined in with we did a show on as favourite Bond episodes. That was just basically talking about the James Bond franchise. And that was because his backs were against the wall. And we didn't have a great deal of time, but we wanted to get something recorded. So we just picked that up and sent out a message on Twitter on the morning. And then by the evening, we'd got loads of feedback. You know, everybody's like talking about the favourite Bond. So we just kind of play it fast and loose now. We don't bother with the three films as much, but we do sort of set each other up for it, if you like. But it's more in the background because obviously at the moment with the guests, that's become the whole thing. I tend to like to watch a film at least three or four times if I'm going to talk about it, you know, and having guest films in, it's like sometimes I've never even heard of it, you know, and you need to be able to watch it first time just to take it in as a film, second time to look at it a bit more and get more of a hang of it and see if there's any bits you missed. Third is from the critical angle where you think you're trying to sort of pick faults with it, you know, and check for plot holes and see if you can sort of not bomb it and destroy it, but bomb it, you know, you know, just have a comedy run through of it. And then the fourth one is just to pick out my favorite bits of audio, if you like, you know. This is where I'm actually watching it without actually opening my eyes and listening to it.
Right, okay. Yeah, so you're just getting an idea and obviously getting whatever you need from it as well. Yeah. From like the soundtrack and things like that. Yeah. As well, isn't there? There's always that kind of effort.
I mean, the soundtrack thing, we did an episode on Ocean's 11 not long back, about a month ago, and it was quite funny because there's quite a lot of David Holmes music that I could use, but there was some passages where the David Holmes tracks wouldn't work because they were too long for timing or too short for timing. So I ended up just recording stuff on my own. It just made stuff that sounded like David Holmes.
Right, okay.
And nobody can spot the difference either, so I'm quite chuffed with that.
Oh, fantastic. That's
got away with it.
Exclusive. So you mentioned there about watching it three or four times. I mean, I would assume that if you're watching something like Eraserhead or Inception, it may be more than three or four times. because I recently recorded an Eraserhead episode. I'm not sure if that's going to air now, but
I
must have watched it about 15 times to get into the podcast. And even then, I'm still going, I just don't know. I do love it to bits. I do love it to bits. It's a fantastic film, but just to try and analyse it is... God knows. I think there must be thesis on it. where would you start? You know, the Man in the Planet is just mind-boggling enough, let alone anything else. And obviously, the likes of Inception, which I listened to the Inception podcast. That was one of your early ones.
Yeah,
which was quite good. And the way you link it with Heat and with the sound, again with the soundtrack disappearing.
Yeah.
And I also link Christopher Nolan seems has that with Heat actually, because. I think the Dark Knight is very influenced by Heat, especially the beginning, the bank robbing scene.
Mm-hmm.
It's very kind of Michael Mann. So it was nice to hear sort of familiar opinions on those type of things as well.
Yeah.
So with so you've got the, obviously you've got your 30 episodes in, and you are changing the way you are, which I think is a good thing, really. I like it with the fact that you've realised, or you know, it's not just all about just being formulaic, and you know, and that can get boring, to be absolutely honest with you, yeah, sometimes. So having a bit of mix is a good thing to do, and hopefully I'll find something to mix in with mine. So we'll see how we get there. You also early on had a discussion about Netflix and Amazon, because the one thing that your podcast tends to do is look at films that you can get online or buying DVD and things like, yeah, that. And I think that was because not all of you were going to the cinema. Is that right?
Exactly. Or, I tend to never go, and Ali's the one that always goes.
right. Okay. So it's a happy medium just to have ones that you can physically watch.
Yeah.
So and you did have a short discussion, and probably that's changed a bit over the year, I would have thought, because Netflix, you were discussing about the fact that they're doing a lot more indie films, a lot more indie indie TV shows, and Amazon were the ones, and we've also got on the horizon the Disney kind of streaming service coming as well. So I can see it fracturing. And where do you think that's going to end up? What are your opinions on that, really?
It's getting more and more impossible to find anything on Netflix now that's worth watching, to be quite honest, because now you open up, I don't know whether you've seen your front panel just lately, but it seems to be an invasion of Netflix originals, you know, where it's lots of TV series, lots of binge on this, and, you know, not films that you even heard of, you know, never mind think, oh, it might be worth a shot. There are some good films on there. There's Okja for a start off. That's a great film. But, you know, it's just hit and miss and very scattershot. And bizarrely, Amazon is the one that was always the sort of weaker of the two, but they seem to have come on since Netflix have started kicking out studios. Amazon looks like they've been picking them up, if you like. So you're actually getting a decent selection on there now, but they still don't cater for me for my tastes quite a lot. So I tend to go to Filmstruck, which classic cinema, you know, but it's not just classic cinema as in 1938 Battleship Potemkin or something like that, although it is on there. But it's just 70s and 60s stuff as well. It's a really good channel.
Yeah. Would have the things like The Parallax View and Manchurian Candidate and things like that on it. And
In fact, Manchurian Candidate is on there at the minute, and All the President's Men, I think, is the big one for them at the minute. But so it's getting more and more expensive, if you like, because the more channels you're looking at, you know, the reason I've still got Netflix, I would have binned it off, is because my 4-year-old likes to put Netflix on for Netflix Kids, which is fair enough.
Yeah.
Captain Underpants has saved a lot of days.
And what I've noticed, I was speaking to, I work in a projection room, as it happens, on occasion. The job I'm in at the moment is a managerial position.
Awesome.
But I started in projection, and I still have a input, and I've actually built a second cinema screen, as it happens, over the last couple of weeks. But I have an input on there, and I always am willing to help out when needed. So I'm generally in projection maybe once a week, doing like live streaming or something like that.
Wow.
So it's nice to keep my fingers in there. But the thing that's obviously picking up for me, I kind of lost my trail of thought there, but the thing that's picking up for me for cinema is the likes of Netflix bringing out films. I think the Kurt Russell one is coming out soon. I think that's going to be a general release, but also on Netflix.
Yeah.
And Annihilation was bought recently, and the Cloverfield one, which was absolutely awful. I was so looking forward to seeing that. I love the Cloverfield franchise. I love the idea, but it just doesn't work. It just doesn't seem to be working. It was just the fracturing for me. I think that Disney, having Disney coming over the horizon, you've got Amazon, Netflix, you've got Filmstruck, as you mentioned there, which is probably a good one for the niche market, really. But you've got all of these ones that are coming, and you can imagine that, you know, people are going to be fighting tooth and nail for the rights for different ones. And there's just not that all one suited format or even place that you can go to, really, and that's a concern for me.
See, there's also the flip side of it, where you've got the problem of hardware, because my TV, for instance, has got Amazon and Netflix built into it, but for Filmstruck I have to go to my Apple TV to watch it,
right?
And obviously that's still got Netflix and what have you on that as well. But then when I wanted to watch Fandor, I have to watch that on my PC.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You well, I'm a Googler, so I've got Chromecast and obviously kind of Amazon.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Yeah. So it's scattershot as well as far as that's concerned. So you've not just got to think what you want to watch. You've also got to think, can I actually see it? You know, stuff like your consoles, your PS4s and stuff. They've always got Netflix or YouTube on there. But Amazon, that doesn't pop up on a few. You know, you've certainly got no film strokes or anything like that. And I feel like they're really missing out. You know, they really should be looking at this and trying to unify it. And perhaps one sort of, like a podcast capture, if you like. You know, you're still... subscribe to these, but you have some sort of program that brings them all under one hood.
Yeah, you get that in other things, don't you? Like cloud storage, you can get like an overall hood, and you know, you can draw your Dropbox and your Google Drives and your OneDrive as well that you can connect together. That might be a good way to do it, because as I say, that's going to be the problem moving forward, I think. You mentioned about your kid's 4-year-old thing as well. That was my trail of thought, which was go back 20 minutes and you might hear what I was thinking. was that the cinema engineer that we use, it was saying that the bandwidth to use for a lot of kids' movies is quite low. I mean, obviously cartoons aren't too bad because you're not needing that detail, but have you noticed anything on particular older things on Netflix, the bandwidth that they use is actually quite restrictive, so you're not getting a decent quality picture and sometimes as well.
Yeah, that's it. That's why I prefer to have Blu-ray. You know, I prefer to always have the hard copy in my hand. If it's something I really love, you know, I mean, I'm a real big Arrowhead, for instance. Arrow Video, it's a cult label and it's an art house label. So it's just got me completely nailed. And I've been following them now for 10 years and I've got every copy, every film that they've released, I've got it. You know, and that's in hundreds now. I don't even know how many that is.
I can imagine your room. It's probably similar to mine. I can imagine it being bookcases full.
Oh, I'm always looking for the best kind of bookcase. you know, it's a good job I haven't got an IKEA near me, because otherwise I've just been there every week.
Fantastic. Let's move back to a bit about the when you watch it 3 or 4 times and you're doing that for your research purposes. What other things do you do to research the movie before you get into the recording?
I read a lot, but not read books on it as such, you know, because obviously time is always restrictive. So just do a lot of research on the internet. I've got a lot of friends on Twitter that are good film friends, you know, and a lot of them have written books themselves. So if ever I'm needing to pick somebody's brains about something, I know that I've got a network there that I can just ask, you know, never be afraid to ask any of these people, because it's just a wellspring of information. Tend to steer clear of Wikipedia, because you can never guarantee that it's 100% correct anyway.
I can imagine being caught short with that, to be honest.
You could make yourself look really stupid there. I've still got piles of books myself on Italian cinema and stuff like that, because it's just not covered that much on the internet anyway. But lots of books on 70s cinema as well. But that's just stuff that I've grown up with over the years, you know, a few on horror, like Ken Newman's tome, if you like. So, stuff that you just know.
Yeah. And how do you, when you've researched, when you've watched it 3 or 4 times and you're sitting there and you're recording your podcast, do you have anything in front of you, or is it all just from memory? Do you just rhyme off what you're going? I know yours is kind of a fluid podcast anyway. But do you have anything in front of you, or how does that work?
We tend to have a skeleton. the notes are ridiculous, because usually there's not a great deal there. The notes usually say something like, it'll say the show number and the show title.
And crap.
Then it'll say intro, or who's hosting it, and then that's it. Intro, it's Ali this week, and then it'll be kind of a big blank, and then feedback at the bottom, you know, where we put in what we've got on Twitter or emails. Sometimes we'll have to write stuff down, just because it could be some details about actors or directors, you know, especially if it's something that's out of our comfort zone. you know, if it's something we're not too au fait with, then yeah, fair enough. But it's usually a big blank of paper.
That's probably the best way to be, because then it's coming literally naturally from you, from your own head, really, rather than sounding like a script, I would have thought.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, I've heard podcasts before where you can tell that they're just talking straight from the page, you know, because they're actually stopping and sort of looking down and then carrying on with the next line.
Yeah, rolling into the next sentence and
yeah,
and then going, and does that make any sense? Yeah, you've got to put a full stop in. If we put an edit in there, put a full stop and we'll be fine. Well, fantastic. So going back, you've mentioned about your favorite types of genre and things. Mm. If you were to suggest to a newbie a particular, say, three films that you would ask people to watch, what would they be from your kind of favorite catalog?
Wow. Right.
It doesn't have to necessarily be your best films, just like for someone to get into like a particular genre, whether it be an art house film or something that would be accessible to someone.
As far as horror, I would go for The Haunting, 1963 film directed by Ray Wise. It's possibly the most scary film you'll ever see. It's a black and white film though, so it'll put people off straight away, especially Ali.
Yeah.
In that film, you don't see anything at all. It's all in your mind. All you've got is some amazing camera work and some great sound design. And it's 1963 and you think, how the hell did you pull this off? It still stands today. Sometimes I can put the Blu-ray on and I'll not get as far as the menu. The menu comes on and think, I'm not ready for this today.
Yeah, those are the type I actually like. I'm not a big... I love The Thing. I do love The Thing. It's absolutely a fantastic movie. But I do love the psychological aspects of stuff, and something like that is definitely something I would look into, probably during the morning, I would have thought.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. The stuff that actually makes you think you've seen something, like Texas Chainsaw Massacre, for instance, you know, I think they're a far cleverer film than something that will show you gratuitous stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, everybody always says, oh yeah, I remember seeing all the blood in Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and there's virtually nothing. If anything at all, thinking about it.
Well, we have that. There was also, this is going up, not off track, but in TV, I remember when I was growing up, there was a TV show in the UK, and in America it was called MI5, but it was called Spooks Over Here.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And there was a famous actress who, in the first season, had her head put into the chip fat.
Yes,
and
yeah,
it didn't happen. It happened,
all
but
you
it, was
heard.
Off, all, it was off screen. You heard it. And the amount of complaints that they got from that at the time, and people refer back to that whenever Spooks is mentioned.
Mm.
And it's like, that didn't actually happen. You didn't see it. But people in the heads, as you say, it's really interesting psychological experiment, that, in some ways, because, you know, it's amazing what people in their own heads have made that up and
yeah, filling the blanks.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. What else? Well, what would my top three recommendations be? Brazil by Terry Gilliam. It's a great film from 1985. It's a dystopian future where steampunk, before steampunk was actually a thing, steampunk was all over the place in Terry Gilliam's Brazil, where you've got a man that's trying to break out of the horrible job that he's in, and the only way he can do this is through his dreams. And of course, then, it being Terry Gilliam, it just means his dreams end up being reality, and it gets really confusing. Great film. And it's got Robert De Niro in it as a plumber, so that's always a good thing.
Yeah, at least he's not not a parent or a grandparent.
Oh, good grief.
So.
What is he doing? His career has just completely stopped, hasn't it? He's just given up. He's gone, oh yeah, I can do comedy. No, you can't, Robert. You are terrible.
Fantastic. So that's number two. So what would number three be?
I would have to go with my old stalwart, and it'd have to be Blade Runner.
Oh, right, okay, yeah.
Enough said. You don't even have to describe that. Just everybody knows.
No. Did you hear about the, or get to see any clips of the secret cinema of Blade Runner?
No, I didn't. No, I did know that they were doing it, but just too far north for it. Sorry.
Yeah, yeah. Same here. I'm probably across the way from you. I'm over in Cumbria, so it's.
Oh yeah.
So I'm not. It's a long way to London.
Yeah, we're like the place that time forgot.
Exactly. Okay, so that's fantastic. Also, something that just for myself, and I'm sure people would like to be interested. There was a couple of things that you mentioned on one of the podcasts where you said that your home cinema is fantastic. I want to know what it is.
All right. At the moment, the TV is a Samsung 60-inch 4K screen. I can't remember the model number because it's about as long as your arm.
Yeah, and it's probably the Sam F26446 0Z.
Yeah, and I can't even remember what the surround amp is, but it's a Dolby Atmos amp, and it's a Pioneer one, and it's 7.1, and that is a recent one. I've had to upgrade it because the other one that I used to have had finally given up. But it didn't hold me anything because I'd had it for, about a decade at least. It probably more, actually, thinking about it. But yeah.
It wasn't a case of accidentally pushing it out off the table by intention. I need a new one.
No, you couldn't accidentally push these anywhere. It weighs a ton. It feels like it's a washing machine. You've got concrete slab in bottom, I'm sure of it.
Maybe. Oh, I accidentally put a sledgehammer to it.
Normally I could probably ream these things off, but it's so early in the morning and I've been up for 60 hours now, so.
Yeah, no, I understand. That's completely understandable. So, so finally, just to finish this interview off, thank you very much for coming. It's been a pleasure to speak to you.
It's been great.
What have you got in the coming weeks and coming months with FilmGuff and anything else you've got coming up, really?
We've got a few authors coming on that are quite interesting because they go really in depth, and there's one chap that's probably recorded our longest podcast so far. The podcast recording itself was 2 hours 25 minutes. It'll probably cut down to about an hour and 50 afterwards, but that's still going to be our longest one.
Okay, well, check out that should be, I'm really looking forward to that. I've definitely got you on my Pocket Cast list anyway, so how can we find you on the social world?
Well, it's at FilmGuff. I think it's actually capitalized as well. I think it's capital F and capital G. So,
okay.
But at FilmGuff on Twitter, that's usually the easiest way to hit us up. I'm on Twitter as at Kevni, that's CEVNI. And Ali's on there as at Corn_Wolf. We're on filmguff.net. The website itself gives you all the information you need and has links to all the episodes. You can also catch us on Letterboxd. We're on Letterboxd as well, which is a really good film networking site.
All right, okay. I'll check that out as well. Fantastic. So, again, thank you very much for coming on, Kev. It's been much appreciated.
It's been great, Kev.
I'm sure that we'll probably speak again at some point. Feel free to get in touch if you need anything from me or you want me to come on at any point. I'm sure I'll be
definitely
happy to do that. But for now, thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye.